think we'll start and hopefully we'll get Jonas or Jean or both of them on the call in a little bit.
Do we have a quorum?
I don't know if we have to have a quorum for committee meetings.
Okay. I wasn't sure.
That's a probably a pretty good question. So I don't know that anything that, I mean, I kind of, and maybe I'm incorrect, so tell me if you guys disagree, but my thought is that it's more just kind of a discussion of what our possible next steps are, but I don't know that this group would be voting on a definitive decision about something.
Mm-mm. I think, isn't it that the committees always just make the recommendations and the full council votes?
Right.
Yeah. This is a lot of this is just talking about kind of how to proceed with, like, general body of work and
mm-hmm.
timelines and stuff. I think it should be fine.
Okay.
That's a good question, and we'll check so that in the future if we do some of these phone calls, we know if that's a necessity or something.
Right.
Okay, well, I know that Sherry, you said that you were looking over the plan. Paula, I wasn't sure if you were going to be able to. Were you able to read any of the outline?
No, I wasn't. I'm still having trouble with my email, so I haven't read it.
Okay. Well, I can maybe just quickly go through what the chapters are that that we broke down for the plan, and then maybe we can talk about topics within each chapter or research questions that we have that we can moving forward the staff can start research on or the committees can start discussing. So I'll just read the table of contents first and then we can go into details. So we have the basic executive summary introduction. Chapter one is the background information, which is just going to be all of the statutory duties of the council and staff and the information about the committees, basically what we've been doing thus far as a council. Chapter two is defining service-enriched housing and supporting terminology. So this gets to some of the issues that were brought up at the last council meeting on March 2nd about, how are we defining a lot of the language that we use in our definition, and then maybe some value statements with that. And I think for that one, that'll probably be a pretty good discussion for the policy committee and then also ultimately for the council in terms of, is there any concern that somehow by adding too many terms or definitions, are we somehow making it more and more narrow? And if that's the desire of the council, then that obviously that's just the direction we'll take it. But because all of the actual funding sources involved will have their own limiting definitions as it is, if we came up with a definition that, let's say, for disability that somehow conflicted with theirs, or maybe a better example would be if we use our definition for integrated housing and that somehow is in conflict with something else, have we now kind of limited the ability for that funding source to be used as service-enriched housing? So I think that's something we'll want to talk about for that section. And maybe we toss it out as terminology that can be commonly used, but that it doesn't have to be used in a limiting sense.
Mm-hmm. I think it's important that we're as precise as possible in our definitions so that there's not a lot of opportunity for misinterpretation.
Okay. All right. And so then the next chapter three is actually goes into identifying existing sources of funding for integrated housing and health services. So this is a statutory directive for the staff, actually. And so we thought that this section of the plan would include resources that are currently being used by state agencies within Texas, also looking at what options there are for federal funding and for private sources of funding, and maybe seeing what other states have used for service and rich housing purposes. That's chapter three. Chapter four is identifying barriers. So this is a statutory directive that the Policy and Barriers Committee was given. And that would include regulatory limitations, administrative limitations, funding limitations, and then limited coordination. So I don't know if we had anything to say on that section. Do we want to go into any opinions on that section? Anything that you guys think would definitely need to be in the plan, or any research that you think we should now going forward be prioritizing for that section?
I really think it's important for the Policy and Barriers Committee to look at this piece and really make that determination and recommend to the council. What do you think, Paula?
Well, I think those are some good headings. You said regulatory and fiscal and two others, right? Coordination, and what was the other one?
And administrative.
Administrative. I was just trying to think if there were other, I think part of the thing is that I see one of the roles of the council as identifying barriers, and that's a lot of, or some of what happened in the forums, but I think it's going to be kind of an ongoing process because there's so much we don't know. This is new to a lot of us, pretty much all of us really, because this hasn't been in existence before,
Right.
So all we can do is look at other states and see the barriers they've encountered, but that may or may not apply to Texas. So that's going to be a work in progress, but I guess you're right for this first plan. Are there going to be goals and objectives and some kind of an action plan in the plan?
Now, one of the chapters is the actual policies that you guys are going to be recommending. And we have that after, kind of, so after each of the subcomponents of barriers and funding and best practices and funding models and cost education, we kind of wrap it all up with, so here's our actual policy recommendations.
Okay. Well, I like those headings, but we'll just have to see if other people have. Right now, my mind's not going anywhere particularly, unless maybe cultural barriers would be one. Or cultural, ethical. And that kind of goes back to who we decide will be the target populations somewhat. So, but,
okay.
I might be able to fall under one of the others. I don't know, but we'll see.
Okay. So the next chapter of the plan we have is Chapter 5, which would be research on best practices and identification of possible models of service-enriched housing. So that was a statutory directive for the staff, and as you know, in the first document we gave you back in November, we started that process of researching best practice models. And I think also we're going to try to see if there's models already in operation in Texas. I think that during our public forums, we heard of a couple of examples that the public was giving of best practices within Texas, and see, if it's possible to use best practice models from other states or other municipalities throughout the entire state, and what maybe the barriers are that make Texas a bit different than other places. I don't know if there's any questions or any thoughts about that section. Anything you think we need to be focusing on?
Will you include a synopsis of those three or four states that you gave us when we first came together?
Yes. That's definitely, I think, something that's going to be included, hopefully expanded upon. I've looked into after November's meeting when I got that document to you. Oh, did someone join?
Hi, this is Jonas.
Hey, Jonas, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Good, good. We're just going through the plan outline chapter by chapter.
Okay.
So right now we're talking about chapter 5. Were you able to look at the document at all?
I have looked at it briefly, yes.
Okay, great. So we're talking about chapter 5, which is page 14, about best practice models. So, Paula, to answer your question, I've gone a little bit further than that first synopsis I gave you in terms of looking at how the definitions and programs that I gave you guys have been operationalized since the inception of the programs that their best practices. So I've definitely been trying to round out, I guess, our best practice section. And hopefully this one will be one that we don't have to do much more on, and we already have a lot of information collected on it. But just in case there was anything else that anyone wanted to add to best practices, something you thought of that maybe we had missed, any thoughts?
Well, I guess you can't really include the PACE program or because it didn't have any residential component, right? But that was quite impressive. I could see that as a model with some residential attached, but...
Right. Yeah, but, I mean, it's true that there wasn't any residential component.
Yeah.
Well, and, you know, that kind of gets to the issue, too, of when we think of models, are we looking at models where service-enriched housing is somehow that they literally have to be on site together?
Well, that's true. And really, we didn't want it to be tied to necessarily having to be on site.
And I was just going to double check. Because the reality is, like, if, for instance, because we said on or off site, our definition, and if, for instance, let's say, maybe one of the models is that someone has a voucher for the housing, and then they get their services coordinated through somewhere like the PACE program.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I would think that those two together are a service-enriched model.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not one-stop shopping in the traditional sense. So, I mean, I think we want to be kind of creative and open-minded as we come up with the model section, because the more models or possibilities we come up with in that chapter, the more opportunities there are for people over the ensuing.
Right. And if they're all on-site, then it's going to start to look a little bit like supported housing, which I think we're trying to avoid. You know, I just lost my train of thought. I'll come back to it. It's floating around in there.
Okay.
I really like the direction that you're going, and I think, you know, the only thing that we've wanted to be very cautious about from the very beginning and what you've outlined, I think, takes that into account very well, which is you don't want if the person decides to leave whatever housing they're in, you just don't want that, you want them to be able to still get their services and not be limited to just living there.
Right, right. And, you know, especially because one of the tasks of the council, and Ashley, correct me if I say this wrong, but is also to create a database. And so if, you know, over time, maybe the evolution of that is that there's a database with both housing that is independent of services, but if we can marry them up for someone based on where they are geographically, that we aren't narrowing it to just on one property kind of picture.
I remember what I was going to say. It really was a question, and that is that did you get the impression, you know, from Senator Nelson and the representatives that the primary focus here is health services? Because I got really confused when Donnie, was talking so much about health services at our last council meeting. Is the intent primarily health services? Do you know?
You know, it wasn't something that we discussed with them during the most recent conference call we had with the staff of Senator Nelson and Representative Chavez's offices. I can tell you from the statute itself that the duties section usually refers to health services, but I don't think that that's at the exclusion of other types of services. I think that it really makes sense in terms of what we've heard from our stakeholders during the public forum process that we would include functional services, long-term support, not just acute medical aid.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering, well, that's good to know because I think that impacts how this all unfolds for me. I was wondering in that first chapter, I think it was, that defines, gives the definition, if also we might consider putting the identified range of services that we've seen in looking at what's been done in similar projects, that it could range from this all the way to this. You know, I know that you're going to, in Chapter 5, that you're going to give best practices, but in that first part where you're just looking at, this is the definition, it might be really helpful too to say, you know, these services could include or may include, and then give so that people know exactly what we're talking about up front.
Yeah, so you're saying that in the Chapter 2 about defining service-enriched housing
knowledge. Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
It helps them, I think, set the context then for, a big part of the rest of the report.
Because it sounds like it's going to be a fairly large report, lots of pages, and there are certain things that I really hope we can red flag that they can find quickly and, you know, come away knowing.
Sure. Okay. Okay. So I guess we can go on to the Chapter 6, which is the cross-education of state agencies, and that's statutory directive of the Cross-Agency Education and Training Committee. I tried to pull, because that committee was able to start discussing the issues that, of the biennial plan at their first committee meeting in January, so I pulled a couple of the topic areas that we discussed and included some questions about institutionalizing knowledge, that kind of thing. Oh, sorry, was someone going to say something? I listed a couple topics about training, types of training, online resources that could be available, things like that. I wasn't sure if anyone had any questions or any concerns right now about that chapter. Sherry, I know since you're the sole
right
person.
Well, I have questions because I'm really vague on who the state agencies are that need just cross-training, and, you know, I don't know that I've ever caught on to that part of this ordeal.
I think at a minimum, it's the agencies that have been employed in to have a presence on the council.
Okay.
More of a...
There's eight.
Right.
I think
mostly health and human services.
Yeah, I mean, if those eight agencies even were where this got to, that's far more than where we are today. And so then if through success with those eight, we identify additional agencies that would be fruitful to have in that.
And those are all state agencies. And I guess one of my questions is why, you know, nonprofit organizations that play a key role and will play a key role, particularly when it comes to the people themselves and referrals and follow-up, why they weren't included.
Well, actually, they would be included in the next chapter, which is assistance and training for local entities.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So we broke it down to where the Chapter 6 is specifically about state-to-state communication and education, and then after that, having some type of assistance and training from the state level to the local level and from the local level to the consumer.
Well, I don't know why I got the impression that the legislation itself really targeted state agencies.
Well,
it did.
Oh, right. I mean, it did to a certain extent because state agencies don't do a consistent job of talking to each other.
Yeah. I know that's true.
What the conversation that came up during the first cross-agency committee meeting was that we're going to have, you know, different education models, different training models, depending on, you know, what level we're talking to. So if we're talking to someone in a fellow state agency versus talking to someone who is on the ground implementing a specific program to consumers, we're going to have different models of training and assistance.
Sure. Okay.
I guess we can go into that. That's the next chapter. Unless anyone had anything else about the state-to-state.
No, I thought you guys did a pretty good job at pulling that.
Okay.
And Paula, I know since you haven't gotten a look at this, the way it's laid out within each of these chapters, we actually came up with a pretty specific list of questions so that when this gets to the full council and then as we start doing the committee meeting, you know, hopefully the questions will kind of tailor where a lot of the discussion needs to go to actually and fill out the report and cover what y'all's tasks are.
Right.
So the next section is about the assistance and training for local entities, Chapter 7, and questions for driving this section included, you know, utilizing provider networks to disseminate resources and information. Also, you know, how it works both ways for the local providers to, you know, let us know what information that they don't have or they need that consumers are asking about. How do we make sure that we're connecting our local providers to each other, local housing providers to local health and human service providers. And then how could we possibly maintain and update a clearinghouse of information about the local providers that are providing services that deal with service-enriched housing, and also how do we create a single point of entry or a one-stop shop for informational resources and referrals for both housing and health services. So if anyone has any thoughts or questions or research that you think we should do on that section, anything come to mind? All right. I wasn't quite sure if I should do it this first or the performance measures first, but I put the policy recommendations in, as Chapter 8. And that would be kind of, once we've given all of this information in the previous chapters, this is kind of what we're saying our goals are by the policies that we recommend for increasing or promoting the production of service-enriched housing.
And one of the things we've talked about for this section is that, you know, the policies probably need to be categorized in a couple different ways. I think there's issues of, you know, what are they addressing in terms of, is it coordination, education, actual design of models, need for funding? So there's some broad categories that way. But I think there's also the broad categories of, does the policy require an action at the federal level, at the state legislative level, at a state agency level? And I think there's even just the discussion of, you know, how can the council try and actually influence real policies in the agencies? Because one of the things I think none of us want to see happen is that this document ends with a bunch of recommendations, but the state agencies who then would need to actually implement those policies, which is probably a cross-section of all the state agencies on the council, don't walk away doing that work, or their boards choose not to for a variety of reasons. So I think we'll want to craft them in ways that we hopefully can be in a position to really influence those agencies to do those things.
Mm-hmm. Well, and maybe, you know, I think probably one of the things that we could do, or that you could do, actually, or we could do as a council, is to, you know, take the recommendations back to our legislative sponsors, and maybe, you know, maybe they could exert some of that influence that you talk about, so that the other agencies, you know, would really look at what it might take to implement some of our recommendations, whatever they will be, you know, into their the services that they deliver or whatever they administer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I would imagine that we could, you know, probably when the report is done, set something up. You know, I would hope that as the sponsors, they would be willing for us to do a presentation to them of, you know, here's what we recommended and kind of here's why and here's what we would think the next steps should be. I mean, obviously, and one of the last sections of the report is a discussion of all the next steps, because, you know, there's a good bit of what's in the statute that we aren't hitting in time for this report. And I think that's fine, and I don't necessarily think that that was contemplated, like a long-term database of service-enriched housing. Obviously, the housing has to be there to begin to gather data on it. So stuff like that. So, you know, I don't think there's an expectation for most areas that this report is the last one. It's really just the first step.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
Okay. So the next chapter is for developing performance measures. And this was a statutory directive that we hadn't broken out any responsible committee for that, as it seems that one, you know, it would be once we got any policies or funding streams underway that then we would want to track our progress. But I think that there's also we could also track our progress in terms of
implementing the policies.
Yeah, and implementing the policies. So I don't know, I'm not quite sure how fleshed out that section would be for this first report.
Right. Well, I like it, though, that, you know, if we do come up with policies in Chapter 8, I think you said, then we have to have a way to monitor whether or not we've made any impact, you know, if anybody's implementing those policies, if they're moving anything forward. So I could see us coming up with some indicators and initially, and you're right, that would grow as more was identified.
I mean, you know, even if we had just, you know, one or two indicators for each of the categories listed in Chapter 9, and say, you know, that this will grow over time, I think that's good, just to give the reader, number one, the indication that, you know, we understand that follow-up is important, and you've got to be able to track your progress, and we're thinking along those lines. And it takes time, and there'll be more in the next final report.
Well, and to me, that's what sets it apart as a plan as opposed to, you know, a summary document.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. And then, yeah, the final chapter is conclusion and next step, that, you know, responsibilities of the council that we haven't yet completed at this time, and where we're going from, basically where we're going from here into the next two-year period of being able to gather information and recommend policies and things like that. So, and then appendices, whatever they may be. And that's pretty much the end of the plan.
And that all has to be done by September 1?
Yes. And we had come up with actually kind of a series of questions for us to talk through and kind of a proposed vision of labor, almost, so to speak, for purposes of this call. Essentially, the chapters can kind of be broken out into either mostly the staff, then reporting up to the full council for things like the background section and the sources of funding that have already been identified, because that's very much just kind of a research. It's almost like writing a research paper and then kind of turning it into you guys and the broader council for critique and editing and that kind of thing. But the balance of the chapters would really kind of be divided among the two or three committees, all of which, of course, then would ultimately roll up. And our thought for that, because that'll help kind of organize how we set up the next few committee meetings, is that Chapter 2, which includes the defining the service-enriched housing, kind of getting that firmed up once it's gone out for public comment, and then the supporting terminology would be the policy and coordinating committee. Excuse me, the policy committee, but then probably also the coordinating committee would work on it. Identifying barriers, of course, would be the policy and barriers committee. The best practices, research, and models for housing would be policy and barriers. Cross education would be the cross-agency committee. Same with the assisting and training local entities. And then I think 8, which is the policies, of course, really will take place in all of the committees and roll up as, you know, as you do the research on each section, and how does that roll into actual policy recommendations. And then performance measures probably will, again, kind of happen in all of them as you make policy recommendations. Ways to measure those policy successes will probably just kind of come about as a natural part of the conversation. If that breakout sounds okay to you guys, then at least we can, as we plan for our next series of communications with everybody, we can kind of go forward with the presumption that that's roughly how the work will get split up.
So the policies and barriers would be 2, 3, and 4?
So it would be chapter 4 and 5. And 2.
2, 4, and 5.
Yeah, 2, 4, and 5.
So that's just 5. That's the one. That's the best practices one, right?
Correct. And identifying possible models of service-enriched housing.
Okay. So, I really see that as primarily staff, but I guess we could say I heard about this model. Check it out. But I.
Sure.
Okay, you guys are really scaring me. This sounds really like a lot of work.
Well, and I agree, Paula, that, I mean, for the research piece of that, sounds more like a staff endeavor, which, I mean, you can take that to the policies and various committees saying, this is what we've found, should we include it, kind of thing.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think that the original best practices that were put in that first document for you guys has a range of models that I think there have been discussions since then about, because I included models that had assisted living as the provision of housing, but I think there is some, maybe still some conversations to be had about whether that's something that you want to recommend as a best practice, because I'm on both sides of that issue.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that will be a tough discussion. I think also, too, and I remember reading through those models, and I don't remember the PACE model being included, or a model like PACE.
No.
But that would be a really good example of how you could do something off-site, Lynn linked to. And then I also was thinking, you know, all of those models are outside of Texas, but there have been some projects built with some tax credit dollars that do provide some forms of supportive housing, such as transportation, you know, and so I think it'd be good to say locally, here are a few examples of, I know it's not a full state policy, but at least it's a project that can indicate that something like this does work, you know what I'm saying?
Definitely, sure, definitely.
I think we heard about those at the public forum, so I think part of it may be just going back to those transcripts and looking at what examples were recommended to us and maybe just delving into those a little bit deeper.
Yeah, well, like I said, even my sister moved into one, a senior project that had tax credits associated with it, and so she has these services that you commonly wouldn't get in her apartment complex, which is really cool because she's blind, and, you know, these are really nice for her, makes her life a lot easier. So it's being done. It's just not talked about very much.
Yeah.
I was wondering in what chapter or if it needed to be its own chapter. Maybe it's in chapter one, but would there be a little write-up about all the public forums, the four public forums that were held and attended and, you know, kind of a
yeah, that's actually something that I was thinking we probably did want to flesh out in its own chapter, probably towards the beginning. You're right, Jenna, it's probably around the background section where we talk about the, you know, what the council has done thus far. We can include what the feedback that we received from the public was, and how what they testified on really kind of drove the direction in which we went for all the rest of the chapters.
Yeah,
so
it set the foundation for this first biennial report.
Right, sure.
Yeah. And, you know, I think I've said this before, I'll say it again, I think that was a very, very good thing that we did to do that so quickly after we formed. And so I think, you know, I think we need to let other people know that that was a good thing.
Well, and not only that, but, you know, I've been to quite a few public hearings in my day, and those were some of the best. I mean, they really did produce some great input.
Oh, I have to say, I have been to put on, done everything you can do with a public hearing, and I can say those four public hearings I have ever been to.
Great.
I really felt good about them, too. A lot of times you feel like it's a waste of your time. I was just enthralled the whole time. So I know that you guys had a lot to do with personally inviting people, and that was cool because you knew who to invite. But also, I was impressed that they really were, you know, they were eager to testify and get the word out.
Yeah.
So it really worked well.
Someone else join the call?
Yes, Trish Bodie with Hill Co-Partner.
Oh, hi.
So
let's see. What was our next question? Oh, so the next question that we had for the committee would be kind of the next steps as we go forward, because, you know, with the small amount of time that we have for the plan is due, we probably want to try some type of meetings in between our face-to-face committee meetings and full council meetings. And, you know, I know people, especially for those who are outside of Austin, conference calls may be an easier way to get in touch with everyone and to get feedback. That way, staff could email out to a committee, you know, the research they've done on a specific topic, and then have a conference call that is a specifically assigned topic to discuss that is going to go into the plan. So we wanted to see how you felt about, you know, having conference calls that are more frequent between the upcoming committee meetings, that we can really flesh out all the details that are going to be in these chapters.
I don't think there's any other way to do it.
I agree.
I think it's imperative.
Yeah. Okay. Is there any suggestions as to, you know, the way that I was looking at it is that it could be like every other week for each committee. So that way, for example, The policy and barriers could have, like, the first and third Wednesday of the month, and the cross-agency committee could have the second and fourth Wednesday of the month. Does that sound reasonable?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Well, maybe we can put together a proposal of which days will be which groups, and we can email that to those committee members to see which, if those days work for getting the best consent or, you know, best representation of the full city.
Right.
Wednesdays may be something that everybody's busy, but we'll kind of pitch it that way, and I'm sure we'll be able to come up with a day each week
sure.
that works. That, you know, hopefully everybody on the committee, but if not, the vast majority. Because it would be unfortunate if the calls have very little representation and then we get to the broader committee meeting and then there's a ton of diversion on where it's all going to go.
It will be more than unfortunate.
Okay. Well, I think we'll try to get on that right away and I'll try to get everyone's preferences so that... Because the one thing in order to make sure that we're meeting with Open Meetings Act is that I have to get these on the Texas Register, which takes a little bit of time. So we'll try to start these conference calls in hopefully the beginning of April. And I think that in terms of the next question is how we want to proceed with, you know, sharing this outline, this draft outline that we've come up with the full council and maybe trying to receive feedback on these questions that are within the plan from the council members.
Did you have timelines on that outline?
I don't have them on this outline. There was a separate timeline that myself and David Johnson were drafting this past week, and The way that it was drafted was saying, kind of working backwards from September 1st, trying to make little, you know, mostly internal deadlines for when staff needs to get stuff to committees and to the full council.
Right.
I think essentially because y'all, at least for right now, y'all's last meeting is August 9th, and it's the last meeting prior to the report being due. And so while staff can continue to do a little bit of cleanup and tweaking and editing, I mean, really the blessing of the whole document has to occur at that meeting on the 9th, unless you guys choose to add another one or push it back, which I doubt everyone's super enthused about doing. I think we can accomplish it at the meeting on the 9th, as long as we, you know, plan well with Ashley's excellent at doing for us. But I think the other thing that... You know, we've talked about here at least is that in July it would probably be really fruitful if we have essentially rough draft language of everything.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, hopefully across the whole document there will be general consensus on almost all of it, or at least things that someone might say, well, I'm not a huge fan of that, but I'm not going to pick a fight about it. It's someone else's issue and they feel strongly about it, so I'll respect that. There probably are going to be, though, you know, a good 8 or 10 or maybe more issues that are going to engender quite a bit of debate and dialogue. So our thought is we may just need a good whole-day work session where those issues get talked out in person and decisions made, even if that's by vote. The one thing going into the call that Mike Gerber had asked me to relay, because he wasn't able to be here, is he at least doesn't feel like consensus is going to be the way to get to a final report. He thinks that at least for certain issues, it's going to have to be a vote because at the end of the day, there are some issues that people are not going to agree on, and that's okay, but that doesn't mean we leave the issue out entirely.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be, you know, either, I mean, if it relates to a policy recommendation, it will have to be, this is our recommendation, so a decision one way or the other will have to be made. If instead we're saying, so if you're talking about housing models, you could almost do it as a either this or this, and here's the pros and cons of both. And that way you aren't really having to force a decision from either party. So anyway, that's all boils down to say we think we need probably like a good long work day in July.
I couldn't agree more, and I also think that we do need to do this by vote, and our meeting on August the 9th, we would vote the final report out, basically.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that what's good about getting it done also early is that then we can figure out what are the times in the early fall, you know, September, October, that we can bring this to the various governing boards of state agencies if members of the council think that, I mean, as I think we discussed before, it would be imperative to make these presentations to those boards, so.
Yeah, I know, I definitely, you know, I want the TVHCA board to have a very good presentation on this, you know, hopefully where as much of the council can be there, and, you know, where they hear at least all the policy recommendations that are direct recommendations relating to TVHCA.
When will they meet around, you know, when do you think they'll meet to review this report? What meeting?
The TVHCA board?
Mm-hmm.
I think most likely the September or October board meeting. Obviously, I don't think they make any policy decisions then, but a lot of times when it comes to things like recommendations from specific groups, what would happen is they would listen to the recommendations of the council and the report, and then they would turn around and tell staff, Mike and me and others, you know, okay, well, here's the things of that are interesting to us that we'd like you to flesh out. Or they may alternatively say, hey, for every recommendation that correlates with TVHCA, we want you to report back to us on what you think it would take to do it.
So they won't necessarily need to see it before it's submitted to the legislature.
No, they will not see it before then. And I don't think we want to add them into our process to be.
Okay, that's fine.
No, we don't.
All due respect to the board. Well, then, if it's okay with you guys, when Ashley sends out the email asking for the biweekly conference call schedules, maybe we'll go ahead and start looking for what a good July date is. I think for us to get a full day of it, you know, we may end up needing to do travel the evening before that.
Mm-hmm.
Ask. So we'll start pulling for those dates as well.
And given that that's, you know, summer, the earlier people can put it on the calendar, the better.
Right.
And so in terms of how we're going to, you know, get the results of this meeting out to the whole council. I mean, the cross-agency committee has their next meeting on April 6th. So, I mean, I think that that's kind of an easy time for, you know, Sherry, for you to share, you know, that we had this discussion about, you know, the biennial plan and what's going to go in it. I was wondering, you know, do you think we should circulate this outline and try to get feedback by a certain date from the rest of the council?
I think that would probably be a good idea. Just trying to think of, I mean, I don't know that everybody will give feedback.
You know, I think that's important for this reason. If people see the undertaking this is, they'll understand the necessity for the biweekly meetings.
That's true.
Very true.
Yeah, and they will also understand the need for the work session in July.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes. I mean, having a visual does bring home an impact.
Mm-hmm. And Ashley, if you could, I would like you to ask Dars to braille that outline for me, because I'm really going to need that in a way that I can flip through it real quickly.
Sure. I will do that.
Thank you.
And we'll the one that we'll be sending around, we'll go ahead and make the edits, at least that we've talked about here, like, for instance, adding the additional chapter on the forum input. So one that we'll send around will be a bit different. But it'll, and we'll fix on some of the acronyms too, Sherry, so that
okay.
We spell those out.
That would be very helpful.
Yeah. No problem.
So what I'm thinking is what I'm seeing is then some of these chapters, the end of the actual chapters, will have recommendations.
Wait, what was that?
I said some of these chapters lend themselves then at the end of the chapter is where you would put the recommendations, correct?
Yes, and yeah, that's a good point. I mean, we can either do them at the close of each chapter and then do a roll-up of them at the back, or do them only in the chapters or only at the back.
I kind of like them in the chapters because then, you know, for me, that really flows logically, whereas if you wait and do them at the back, then you're kind of like, okay, now what does this relate to?
Yeah.
I think it's good to have them in both.
Yeah.
At the end of the chapters and then again in the back.
Okay.
You took the words right out of my mouth. I think they need to be at the end of each chapter where it's appropriate to have recommendations. Not every chapter is going to have recommendations, but where it's appropriate. And then, you know, maybe somebody like a legislator or state agency person will want to say, well, I just want to see what their recommendations are. And so there could be an appendix at the back where they could look and to see what the recommendations are.
Are you talking policies when you say recommendations?
Well, both. I mean, some of the recommendations may be policy.
Because that's what Chapter 9 was policies. That's why I'm just trying to track you, Jonas.
I think it would be the stuff in Chapter 9.
Okay.
Maybe Chapter 8. I mean, I think one of the things is, and part of the wording is actually not really looking at the document, is, for me, I didn't, you know, the council in and of itself, I don't know, I mean, you can make policies, but they aren't policies that govern anything, because, you know, y'all don't have the oversight of any agency, which is why, to me, they're really more recommendations about policies.
Mm-hmm.
You recommend, you know, you may recommend that TDHCA adopt a policy that, you know, programs are set aside within the tax credit program. But y'all making that recommendation doesn't create the policy. So, you know, and to me that was just kind of odd wording in the statute because it tells y'all to create policies. So they were trying to pull the wording through the report without, you know.
Within point of fact, we can just make a recommendation for policy.
Mm-hmm.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Right. You know, and I mean, I think you guys can make policies relating to council itself. So if, let's say, you know, one of the tasks of the council is this database or the training module, you know, aspects of things. So sure, if we could, I mean, over time, you guys probably would make policies that say, you know, our policy for health training is X, or, you know, our policy relating to the database and how it's managed will be Y. But I think a lot of it is recommendations on what you guys want and hope the state agencies will do.
Bye.
I think we lost Jonas.
No, I said I agree.
Okay.
Well, I think, you know, in terms of, you know, the questions that we had, that's pretty much what we were just wanting to discuss with you guys, and I will try to type something up for the council, you know, today, and hopefully send it out tomorrow morning to be able to just get everyone's feedback and start scheduling everything. I guess I should ask you guys just right now, I mean, are Wednesday mornings good mornings for you?
Mine varies greatly.
I prefer, I guess, Wednesdays as opposed to, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday is fine. I prefer not to do it on Monday mornings if possible.
So it has to be a morning thing?
No, it wouldn't have to be. I just gave that as an example. If there's a better time during the day.
Personally, I'm a Friday afternoon kind of gal, but that's me.
Oh, gosh, Sherry.
I know.
That was scary.
End my weekend feeling productive and go home.
Paula, any thoughts?
I'm kind of like the first person that their schedule varies so much. It's hard to know. Just throw it out there and I'll do my best.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you guys so much for taking the time out to discuss this with us. And you know, once you have a chance to look over the plan outline a bit further, since I know that, you know, we gave you a little bit of short notice there in reading it, please do send any comments or additional, you know, questions, additional research my way. Email it to me.
I did have one.
Okay.
Just a little thing I noticed. On the background page, in the second paragraph, the bottom sentence, TDHCA to provide advisory employees from TDHCA to provide advisory support to the council. You guys provide administrative support also, right?
Yeah. Otherwise, you guys would have to write it yourself, right?
I know, that'd really suck.
Oh, man. It'd be much shorter than it's going to be, let me tell you.
And probably not near as well put together.
No.
I think this template that you've given us is an excellent start.
Thank you very much, John. Ashley Rock. Well, thank you guys again for calling, and we'll be in touch.
Okay, good.
Great.
Thank you.
Thanks.